From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, exorcisms with Father Wingate. Get ready for that. Before I begin the program, I have a little announcement. I want to thank you for the heartwarming emails and the kindness and the prayers that you have shown our family over the last several months as my sister Glinda has been battling stage 4 brain cancer. She lost that battle today. She passed away peacefully in her home in Detroit. Her two daughters and her husband were there, and it was very peaceful for her. She had lost consciousness about a week or so ago, and we knew it was coming. It was starting. But you have been extremely, extremely heartwarming, and I will never forget that. So there's that. Comedian Joan Rivers has died in a New York hospital a week after suffering cardiac arrest during a medical procedure. The 81-year-old Rivers had been on life support at Manhattan's Mount Sinai Hospital, where she was taken after she stopped breathing in a clinic. Rivers was undergoing just an apparent minor elective procedure at the clinic when she suffered cardiac and respiratory arrest. Paramedics took her by ambulance to Mount Sinai Hospital, about a mile from the clinic where she was initially listed in critical condition. The outpatient clinic is now being investigated by the New York State Department of Health. She was one of the best comedians ever. And she did. Joan Rivers dead at the age of 81. A newly discovered asteroid will pass very close to planet Earth on Sunday. The space rock is estimated to be 60 feet long, expected to fly over New Zealand at about 2:18 p.m. Eastern Time. It won't hit Earth or any of the thousands of satellites orbiting the planet, according to NASA, but it will give astronomers and scientists a chance to study it. You won't be able to see it, though, with the naked eye. On September 1st, a very powerful eruption occurred just beyond the sun's northeastern limb. And then today, Earth-orbiting satellites detected an M2-class flare from a sunspot emerging over the southeastern limb. Let's see what else it does. A Georgia grand jury has indicted Justin Ross Harris on 8 counts, including malice murder and 2 counts of felony murder in the hot car death of his toddler son. He kept the little 22-month-old child in the hot car during the wretched summer that a lot of places have been having. Somebody dies by taking their own life every 40 seconds, according to a significant report by the World Health Organization. It said suicide was a major public health problem that was too often shrouded in taboo. The WHO wants to reduce the rate of suicide by 10%, but has warned that 28 countries have a national suicide prevention strategy. Let's check in with our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, about that. Hey, Peter, welcome back.
Yeah, my condolences to you and the family.
Thanks, Peter. I appreciate that. So this story about suicides every 40 seconds worldwide, why are people so depressed? Why do they want to end their lives?
Well, first, just for some perspective, that's a rate that's been going on for a long time and declining. So this is not about an increasing rate. Okay. The rate of suicide around the world for the last 10 years has gone down 9 or 10%, and probably because health has been improving in general around the world. And I think that, you know, poor health care around the world, being ill, is certainly one of the big contributing factors. You know, the issues are broad and vary a great deal from country to country, George. The rates differ by 40 times from country to country. The average rate right now is 11 people will suicide out of 100,000 every year. It's a huge number. In the U.S., it's a little higher than that. In Canada, it's a little lower than that. I mean, ultimately, it's about despair and about human suffering and about pain. And it's about all the things that cause that. And the things that prevent it. It's interesting that the lower middle class throughout the world seems to be the most at risk, more than the poor even. So there's something about being on the edge but not completely on the bottom. But before going on further with that, I just want to address the issue for personally for people.
Sure.
You know, the first thing is that, and the report states this, suicide is transient. People can feel like it's the end of their lives. They can be filled with rage, despair, depression, physical pain, emotional pain, losses, death of loved ones, abandonment, whatever, you know, the things that torment us human beings, and they can feel intolerable. And that same person a week later or a day later or a minute later can feel different.
Absolutely. Peter, I got to tell you a story based on that. When I first came to the network in 2003, in the building in Los Angeles, it's got a big sign of the name of the bank that's in that building, a huge C. And a woman apparently made her way to the top of the building outside and decided she wanted to take her life, obviously. She jumped, but she apparently changed her mind as she jumped and grabbed the C, and it broke off with her, and she fell, gosh, I don't know how many stories, but to her death. But you're right. They do change their mind in many cases.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and the they is us. You know, we all struggle, and that's another thing, you know. Millions and millions of people struggle with feeling suicidal. And if you can get through it, you can go on to live an amazingly wonderful life. You can have a deeper understanding of suffering. You can give more to other people. You can really come out of that tunnel with a really great light at the end of it. And I've been working with desperately unhappy people for 50 years, more than 50 years now, George. And for certain, I can tell you, however bad off you're feeling at this moment, if you find your way out, and if you open yourself to loving again, loving people, loving animals, loving nature, loving God, you can go on and have a miraculously better life beyond anything you ever imagined. So don't get lost in the despair. And remember, as much as you're despairing at this moment, you could have that much passion directed later on in a more positive way.
Peter, well said. Peter's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. More than 1,900 people have now died in West Africa's Ebola outbreak. There have been 3,500 confirmed or probable cases in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. A senior Islamic State commander in Iraq has been killed in an airstrike on the northern city of Mosul. Iraq's defense ministry also said that a top aide to ISIS leader Abu Bakr Baghdadi has been killed in a strike there as well. Separately, ISIS fighters were reported to have kidnapped 40 men from a town in northern Iraq on Thursday. The group has taken over a number of areas of Iraq and Syria in recent months. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, I want your overall perspective on this ISIS situation. Go ahead.
Well, there's a lot of people that think it's, the sleeping giant is finally waking up right now, the United States, after about 5.5 years of dormancy. I mean, Obama was elected basically, you know, to kind of end these wars, so he's been very reluctant to intervene, and so he's sort of just let this thing sort of, develop over the last, few years. But, you know, now there's this... This is the biggest land grab of sovereign territory and blitzkrieg and mayhem and mass murder that I think the world has seen prior to World War II with the Nazis. And so I think, you know, finally, you know, Washington, there's, you know, on March 23rd, April, 2010, a very seminal event happened in the Obama administration. He signed his name to a thing called the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
And since then, he has had zero support in Congress from the opposite party. And this is the first event, finally, where there's a consensus on both sides of the aisle that something must be done about ISIS. Now, folks need to remember that this group has morphed. If you recall, in 2004, the battles of Fallujah, there was a character running wild in Iraq who was the Al-Qaeda chief in Iraq, appointed by Osama bin Laden himself. His name was Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and he was stringing U.S. soldiers up on bridges like Christmas ornaments. And this is the same group that has morphed now with Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi taking over in 2013 when two prior leaders were killed by U.S. airstrikes. So he's somebody that has certainly exceeded anything that Zarqawi has done. And folks need to remember that Al-Qaeda, as vicious as they've been and as many hits as the U.S. and our allies have taken with him, did not take one inch of sovereign territory in the 20-some-odd years that he was a menace to U.S. So this is declaring a caliphate on July 1 and, seizing all this territory is a great concern to everybody. So finally, I think the sleeping giant's waking up.
I think you're right. Thanks a lot, John. Keep in touch with us. John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. It's almost hard to believe 9/11 is almost 13 years gone past. 13 years ago, we were hit with this tragedy. And still, a number of theories, number of questions. In a moment, Richard Gage joins us, founding member of Architects and Engineers for the 9/11 Truth. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. For 2 hours, we have Richard Gage with us, San Francisco Bay Area architect, member of the American Institute of Architects. He's the founding member of Architects and Engineers for the 9/11 Truth. Richard became interested in researching the destruction of the World Trade Center high-rises after hearing the conclusions of a reluctant 9/11 researcher, David Ray Griffin, in 2006, who's been on the program, which launched his own unyielding quest for the truth. Here he is. He's got the numbers. How big is it now? Over 2,000 architects and engineers now, Richard?
Yes, 2,200, George.
Oh, that's fantastic. And let's talk a little bit more about this event that happened almost 13 years ago. What did you see, Richard? What did you hear? What did you learn to make you a very well-known architect to get involved in the 9/11 truth?
Well, I have to share with you that on 9/11, when I saw on TV those planes hitting the buildings and the buildings coming down, that I was in a state of shock, just like I believe most Americans were throughout our country. I didn't know what to think. Here I am, a trained architect. One would imagine that somebody who knows how to put large buildings together would be able to discern when a building is collapsing versus when one is falling down. In fact, it took me till 2008, George, when I heard on the radio this interview with David Ray Griffin, the evidence that we had not seen on the mainstream media, except for some very courageous stations, programs such as your own. That there's a whole lot of other evidence that Americans do not know about. That, for instance, architects, thousands of architects and engineers know nothing about the third worst structural failure in modern history, and that is World Trade Center Building 7, which I'm looking forward to sharing with your listeners today as well.
You know, Richard, I had a show yesterday about conspiracy theories, and as you know, we're always cutting edge, and we want to get to the bottom, we want to get to the truth, and I always think that, where there's smoke, there's fire, and this whole thing, when it came down, was a little weird to me. You know, the passport of one of the hijackers being found when everything else was burned to cinders. It was just weird. The whole thing was weird. But in the truth movement, and I'm a supporter of what you do, you know, a lot of people would say, and let's not even talk about the Pentagon for a moment, but they would say that no planes hit the World Trade Center. And I think that kind of hurts the real quality investigating when they would say that. It's almost as if the whole thing was a cartoon that was all made up. How do you deal with that?
There are a few people out there that have theories that are not backed up by the scientific evidence, such as the theory that no planes hit the Trade Center, because there seems to be some videos that have been faked out there, so people suspect that, in fact, there were no planes. But I personally have spoken to 8 different people who saw with their own eyes the planes hit the buildings live that morning in New York. And, in fact, 2 of these people saw the 2 planes hit 2 buildings, one each. So, and they were reliving this experience as they were sharing it with me in one of the hundreds of presentations that I've done, you know, around the world. We've been to 32 foreign countries, 80 American cities, 350 presentations now, and to groups of 100 to 3,000. And so I have occasion to meet some very interesting people at these events. And so I'm completely convinced, if not just for that alone, but there's plenty of other evidence to suggest that planes did indeed hit the towers.
I think we shot down the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania. We probably needed to or had to, based on the fact that after those planes started hitting buildings, you know, our government probably said, oh, my God, we got to do something. But why don't they simply announce that and say that? Because I think more people would understand that. It would be tremendously sad, but I think they'd understand it if the government said, look, it was the only way we could take control of that plane. We had to shoot it down. Why do they ignore that?
A reasonable answer. It's probably exactly what happened. I agree with you. There are circumstances that we don't know about in the planning and execution of this four-plane operation, and I'm sure that they have, I know that they have a lot to hide. For instance, at the World Trade Center Twin Towers, we have evidence that these all 3 towers were brought down by explosive controlled demolition, and that's not so controlled in the case of the Twin Towers, as we will discuss in detail. We don't know what else they have to hide. Well, the 9/11 commissioners themselves say that they were lied to by the Bush administration, that they were set up to fail. The attorney for the 9/11 commission himself, John Farmer, in his book stated that at some point there was a decision not to tell the American people the truth about 9/11. This is from the own attorney of the 9/11 commission. So based on that alone, as well as Max Cleland's resignation from the 9/11 commission, citing this is a national scandal, the investigation is now compromised. We've got to have a real investigation.
Yeah, we absolutely do. We're going to talk about Building 7 when we come back in a moment, Richard. But in terms of who did it, and that's always been a big question. I mean, I'm convinced, of course, that those crazed terrorists, most from Saudi Arabia, they were involved. They were there. I'm convinced that Osama bin Laden, you know, helped finance it if he didn't finance the whole thing. But who's this group within government that people have been saying they were responsible to?
Well, in trying to find the perpetrators of this catastrophic crime of the century, we've got to start with the evidence and see what it tells us about the perpetrators. And so let's discuss that question after we look at the evidence point by point, and we have several points to look at, and it is absolutely fascinating. So that's the place to start, because it will tell us a lot of information.
We'll start right there, Richard, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Richard Gage, architect, as we talk about 9/11 truth. Richard, so the perpetrators, and you're right, let's set the stage for the evidence that you want to unfold here. You've had 13 years to look at this. How do we start?
Well, we start with the third tower that was destroyed on 9/11. And like I said, almost every architect and engineer in the country is completely unaware of the third worst structural failure in modern history. This is an absolutely incredible and unprecedented phenomena that this could ever happen. Now, nobody lost their life in here. That may explain part of it. But we were told that this building came down by normal office fires.
Right.
Now, imagine this, if you will. First of all, normal office fires, any office fires, have never brought down a skyscraper in the history of skyscrapers over 100 years, ever. And yet, here on the afternoon of 9/11, at 5:20, about 7 hours after the Twin Towers came down, after witnesses hear explosions, this building drops from top to bottom in under 7 seconds. This is free fall acceleration, straight down, symmetrically, uniformly, and suddenly.
It's like a Vegas casino, Richard, isn't it?
Exactly like the old implosions, classic controlled demolition. In fact, our video, which is 9/11 explosive evidence, experts speak out, shows side by side a controlled demolition from, I think it is Vegas, and building 7 on the right or the left. They both drop simultaneously, same time, look exactly like each other, and yet NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, didn't even seriously examine the possibility of explosives bringing this building down. It was not on their list of hypotheses that they looked at. So they dismissed it out of hand and actually gave us a reason that if it were explosives, we would have seen, we would have heard a loud bang like you do in controlled demolitions. Of course, controlled demolitions use high energy explosives like C4 or RDX, but those do provide bright flashes that are seen by witnesses and these loud bangs. So the evidence leads us to a different conclusion about the use of materials in this controlled demolition. And so at the bottom of this pile, which is about 6 stories uniformly, like a haystack centered in the building's perimeter, what witnesses see and the structural engineers find is pools of molten steel, they call it. Turns out to be molten iron. But either way, see, it takes about 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit to melt steel or iron. So where did those temperatures come from?
Exactly.
Remember, no plane hit this building. So
there
we're
was
not talking
no,
about
no jet fuel. That's right.
Yeah. It's not a component here. So, and even if it were, jet fuel doesn't burn any hotter than office desks, chairs. And
well, to wire this up, Richard, with explosives, one, how many explosives would you need? And two, how do you do it without people seeing you do it?
It would take probably a dozen operatives, about a month, to set these explosives. Now, in maybe a couple of months, in the case of the Twin Towers, we actually had an interesting operation going on the 9 months prior to 9/11. We have the largest elevator modernization ever going on. And this could have given a group of operatives lots of time to set these explosives because the elevator cores are immediately adjacent to the core columns and beams in the buildings. Of course, they would have to have brought under the nose of the security company,
right,
which is Stratasec or Securicom, which had the security contract up until the day, in fact, of 9/11. So we certainly want an investigation of them as well as Ace Elevator, who had this massive contract, a much larger contract than they had ever had or have ever had since. They went out of business right after 9/11. So very suspect, and we need an investigation there, certainly.
And so your contention is that the Twin Towers and Building 7 were wired up with explosives months before the 9/11 tragedy.
Yeah, it must have been months prior, because it couldn't have been done in the days prior.
No,
it's just simply not enough time, and it certainly wasn't done during these buildings construction, because these kinds of incendiaries rather than explosives, which is what the evidence yields. In fact, they wouldn't last, decades. This is a fairly modern material, these more advanced incendiaries, as we'll get into. But FEMA themselves, in their 2002 document, which NIST ejected from their investigative report when they took over in 2002, FEMA had found, though, in Appendix C, and documented very carefully, the hot molten iron invasion of the steel. Now, where would molten iron come from to invade the steel? In fact, Jonathan Barnett, one of the FEMA authors, he's a fire engineer, fire protective engineer. He says that the ends of the steel beams were partially evaporated. Well, what can evaporate steel? This is what thermite does. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. It's incredibly efficient, particularly when used in cutter charges designed and patented for the specific use of cutting through steel in milliseconds with ejecting molten iron. So this was a patent issued well before 1999, and of course, capable of being used in 2001, therefore. So we've got to have an investigation that looks at people who have access to actually advanced thermite, because also found in all the World Trade Center dust samples by the USGS, not by conspiracy theorists or anybody else, but, well, actually found by several other people, mm-hmm. but R.J. Lee, for instance, an investigative consultant doing toxicological studies on the dust, they, as well as the U.S. Geological Survey, find small iron spheres, previously molten iron spheres, the diameter of a human hair. And these are everywhere, comprising up to 6% of this World Trade Center dust in some of these samples. They have no explanation as to where they came from, and yet there they are. Well, thermite does exactly that. It issues molten iron as its byproduct, and in fact, under explosive conditions, such as we have in all three of these high-rises, thermite incendiaries would issue molten iron, and it would be aerosolized, which is what into small spheres, which is what happens, for instance, in a spray bottle when you spray it or when you sneeze. There are hundreds and thousands of very tiny droplets.
Well, Richard,
then cool and fall with all the dust. It's the only rational explanation as to how those got there, and it's consistent with the pools of molten iron seen, in fact, by Leslie Robertson, the structural engineer of the World Trade Center.
Now, the effect of crashing the planes into the buildings that was drama enough if you're a terrorist. I mean, you don't have to do much more than hijack a plane full of passengers, ram it into a high-rise building. That alone is high drama, as far as I'm concerned. Why do you think they decided, if those other people were involved, the perpetrators we'll talk about, to take down the buildings, to physically crash them to rubble? To me, it could be like a ruse where there was either something in the building that they needed to hide, or that there's some other purpose by taking those buildings down. They didn't want us to find something. What's your take on that?
There are indeed several excellent researchers who have made films that are available on YouTube. One can Google Michael Talbot, who has done one of these films, talk about the firms that have relationships with bonds and so forth that were coming to maturity around the 2001 the evidence of which was burned up theoretically in the towers. That there's evidence that gold was being heisted in. And half trucks that were half full of gold, for instance. I haven't researched this as an architect. I've looked primarily at the buildings themselves. But as you suspect, there seems to be plenty of reason, in addition to creating a massive psychological operation against the American people, where thousands were killed, which motivated us to support our congresspeople and our administration in going to war to get those perpetrators overseas who allegedly were responsible for this.
We gave them carte blanche. We let them do whatever they wanted to do.
And in fact, they did. And if we look at, this is part of the who did this. If we looked at who benefited, who were the massive corporations that benefited from these heinous acts and wars. I mean, we're looking at huge corporations, including the media itself, which is censored. The story of the crime of the century. The mainstream media is owned by six corporations, owning 90% of it. Well, who controls the U.S. media? Well, those who researched this issue, such as Project Censored from Sonoma State in California, found that through interlocking boards of directors, the corporations in the industries the arms industry, the banking industry, the insurance industry, the oil industry, these are the industries that control the media, which controls the story, which tells the American people what we need to be told about these events, and keeps the truth as we see it on the internet and from courageous programs such as Coast to Coast AM. It's very difficult to get these truths to the light, and that may have a whole lot to do with it. Although once again, the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth look primarily at the physical evidence that we still have more to uncover here. But we've got to realize that 9/11 set a whole set of things in motion, such as the loss of our civil liberties through the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, the National Defense Authorization Act, where any of us today in America can be arrested without charge, held indefinitely without the right to a lawyer or a trial. We can even be tortured. I'm talking American citizens. This is legal today, theoretically. Well, they signed it into law, and it hasn't been challenged yet by the Supreme Court, but God, we hope it will be. We've also gone to war, and 1 million or 2 million Iraqis and Afghanis have died. We've lost 6,000 soldiers. We've spent $4.5 trillion on the global war on terror. My God, if there's any question about what happened on 9/11, such as the ones we've already raised and many more we're going to raise in this interview. We've got to get to the truth about it in a real investigation, one that uses subpoena power to force the truth from witnesses, that brings them forward by offering them immunity, one that uses the scientific method to analyze all the evidence, not just that which the NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, very selectively brought into their report and filled those reports full of fraud in order to manipulate the results to try to prove their theory of how these three buildings came down.
Could this be like the Kennedy investigation, Richard, where they just don't want the answer?
Yeah, I'm sure they don't want the answer. Whoever they are, and they appear to be people in very high places in industry and selectively placed in government, they appear to be doing everything they can to obscure the truth about what happened, to ignore and destroy the evidence. In fact, within weeks of 9/11, the steel for these buildings was shipped to China for recycling. I'm talking 99% of it gone starting within 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's a crime scene. That's a crime scene. That stuff should have stayed for a while.
It's destruction of evidence in a crime scene. But you know how they got away with it? They declared it an act of war as opposed to a crime. And therefore, they were allowed, theoretically, to do what they wanted to do with the evidence. I mean, imagine this. Three high-rise buildings, the three worst structural failures ever in modern history, and the evidence, which could answer many questions, according to Bill Manning, chief of Fire Engineering Magazine, said the evidence is on a slow boat to China. The destruction and removal of evidence must stop immediately. And yet, and of course, it was not. That was a massive crime in and of itself, as well as the evidence of a cover-up, which we have still yet to cover on the part of NIST, which is a Bush administration governed agency under the Department of Commerce.
Could there have been some rogue organization, black ops type, acting on its own behalf, without hardly anybody in government knowing, other than maybe a few people?
Well, I think we're talking about an operation that must have included people going all the way or almost all the way to the top. I mean, who has the power to have NORAD stand down and not respond to what should have been a fairly typical hijacker response, one that they have 60 times per year on average responded to flawlessly and brought hijackers down? Who could have set up the drills that confused the air traffic controllers all over the country with false hijacking scenarios on the morning of 9/11? Coincidentally.
Jeez. That happened in Britain, too, with the train, didn't it? When the terrorists attacked a train in Britain, weren't they conducting a drill? Yeah.
Yes, they had the same drill on the same trains at the same time that they actually ended up happening. That is absolutely extraordinary. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so strange with all of this. And Judy Woods, and you know her, Richard, Dr. Judy Woods, she contends that these buildings were taken down by some kind of huge pulse weapon. What do you think of that theory?
Well, the evidence shows that we have high-energy explosives and nanothermite, which we haven't even gotten to yet, responsible for the destruction of the Twin Towers, and regular thermite for World Trade Center Building 7.
We're going to come back and talk more with you, Richard, on this. So much to talk about. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.